Welcome back to Across the Bifrost. My name is Sung Soo, and today we have a great episode lined up for you. It's about Guardians of the Galaxy. I do want to take a minute before we dive into the podcast, though, and shout out a few different people, things, and companies. First, all the Patreons who help us keep the lights on, help us pay for the podcast, microphones, recording equipment, hosting fees. Thank you all so much. We really appreciate it. If you want to check out the Patreon, you can at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. Second, I want to shout out Jay over at Discount Games Incorporated, working with us for all the giveaways we do. Thank you so much. Discount Games Inc. is always providing the maximum allowed discount price on all your tabletop wargaming miniatures. If your local game store doesn't have what you need or you can't find it, be sure to check out discountgamesinc.com. All right, without any further ado, here is episode 34, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high.
Thank you for joining us today on the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. I'm joined by my co-host Pat Dunford in just a moment. And today we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm super excited to talk about them. They've been a ton of fun the more I've played them, which is really surprising for me. But we'll get into that more later. I don't mean to bury the lead. So Pat, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you, TT. I'm also excited to talk about Guardians. And you know what? I'm a little bit disappointed that you're surprised that you're having fun with them. I mean, who wouldn't have fun with Guardians of the Galaxy? Those guys are super cool.
I mean, maybe you want an affiliation ability, but hey, more on that later. So we do want to talk about the different ways that we define an affiliation. Pat kind of laid these out in the first affiliation we reviewed, we looked at. So we're going to look at a combination of the leader, the leadership, the affiliated character cards, and the affiliated team tactics cards. Right, Pat?
Yeah, all of these are really important. The characters that make up your roster are going to be there in every single game. You can't consider a leadership or your cards in a vacuum. You have to think about the characters that are going to be interacting with it. It's fine if some affiliations are weak in some areas and strong in others, right? In previous episodes, we talked about things like the Cabal leadership being incredibly strong, or the Wakanda Forever tactics card being great. And it's pretty normal for affiliations to have specific strengths and weaknesses in these four categories.
Absolutely. So, Pat, where do you think we should start today with our Guardians of the Galaxy review?
So I think we should just do a little bit of a overview to talk about how the affiliation plays in general. It's play style and the themes that are quite common when you're building your teams for Guardians of the Galaxy. For me, one of the things that I think defines them well is the low threat value of the characters. They have the cheapest leader coming in at 3 threat, and they have 2 affiliated characters that cost 2 threat, which combine to mean that their teams can be incredibly cheap and incredibly numerous.
Yeah, I always use the term they're very wide, right? You tend to run, we've done episodes in the past about running low model count, maintaining priority, and they kind of do the opposite of that, right? They go wide, there's a lot of them. It's actually hard to build a low model count Guardians list. Well, outside of like tossing fans.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that defines them very well. They're the team that, on average, will probably have one more character than their opponent. So they fall into that realm of, you see in a lot of minigames, right, where they're the numerous faction that will overwhelm their opponent with numbers. And they're also very aggressive. Their characters in general are very good at dishing out damage. But, you know, as I say this, I want to be a little bit wary because I think it's not entirely true. It depends how you build them. What is true is that their characters tend to be very specialized. Their characters tend to be really good in specific areas and are not very good generalists. And this is partly, of course, because they're cheap, right? So if you're a cheap character and you're really good at something, you're probably not going to be good at anything else. Rocket being the best example of this. But you have characters like Rocket, Nebula, Star-Lord, Gamora, who are hyper-aggressive. But then on the other hand, you have characters like Drax, Ronan, and Groot, who are pretty defensive. So your team overall is well-balanced, but your individual characters aren't.
Yeah, and like you said, I think that just generally comes with the point cost that we're paying for them. But that is a good point. When you take a character, they have a very specific role, and they definitely, you're not going to surprise anyone with what they do, right? They're going to execute said role.
Yes, absolutely. And then a couple of other things I wanted to shout out about them. One is they're not very mobile. They don't have any wall crawlers. They've only got one character with flight. So they have difficulty dealing with terrain. And they're really low on throws. And throws are a really important part of the game, right? They're a very key interaction. But most of their characters don't have any way to throw or move anybody else. And this, to me, separates them a lot from Wakanda, who also could be quite a numerous team, but have a lot more pushes and ways to control people, whereas Guardians are much more relying on dazing and KOing in order to get ahead.
Yeah, in my playing of Guardians, I've never played anyone that relies so much on just attack rolls before, if that makes sense. I know I've played mostly Avengers, but Guardians for me is all about just like, I'm just attacking, I'm making value attacks, and I need to get mileage out of them.
Yeah, you really have to. So yeah, I think that's a good summary overall of the affiliation and how it plays. Let's look first at their leader, first character on the roster, the one you're always going to take in Guardians of the Galaxy, and that's Star-Lord. So, TT, what do you make of Star-Lord?
Mr. Peter Quill. We've talked about him before when we did the Star-Lord review. He's interesting. He's kind of underwhelming in the grand scheme of things, right? And he really fits what you said about a generalist, right? He's what we've kind of defined as like a back row blaster, right?
Yeah, he's fine, right? He's like, he's moderately mobile, he's moderately tough, he does good damage, and then he doesn't really have many frills. So he tends to just scoot around shooting things, which is what you'd expect him to do, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think it's interesting because this role is something that is not necessarily that popular in a team. You don't need a lot of characters that do this, and it's not the kind of character you'll often see taken outside of affiliation, but you have to take him in your Guardians team, so you need to make him work.
I mean, you don't have to take him. We'll kind of get into that more a little bit later. But you're never really disappointed about taking him, right? He's not going to be... A lot of the other affiliation leaders are strong enough that you're literally building your roster around them, and I don't think Star-Lord is that, right? He's just someone who is in your roster, correct?
Exactly. He just does his own thing and lets other people do their own thing. I think the closest thing he has to a team synergy is the fact that he's their one flyer, so you can do drop-off plays with him. But aside from that, you're right. He just acts independently very often. I like that his damage output is high for his cost. I like that his elemental gun can put out a lot of effects. And that is one way that Guardians of the Galaxy can try and control the game, is they have quite a lot of ways to put out different effects on the opponent. So you may not be able to move them around, but if you've got a character who you don't want to deal with who damage, you can still have an option for how you deal with them. And of course, the thing that helps define him as a character and is quite important for Guardians of the Galaxy rosters is access to the power gem. He and Ronan can both take it. So you've got two affiliated characters that can take the gem. Have you tried him much with the power gem yourself, TT?
I've taken him a few times with the Star Gem, and I've never been too impressed. The main reason I ever put the Power Gem on him is because I end up wanting him to function like a power battery. But a lot of the times, I prefer him coming in at 3-threat. I will say it's sometimes nice to have another 4-threat character just to kind of meet different affiliation and threat levels. So I haven't been overly impressed with it. What about you, Pat?
Yeah, I think the fact that it really only lets you marginally increase your damage output means that I haven't found it to be great. And when we reviewed him, we mentioned that it also helps him to use team tactics cards. The problem is that with the leadership, it's less valuable to use those tactics cards than for anyone else. I do like that he can be this backline character that can sort of move around to where you need to apply field dressing and patch up. And I found that to be pretty cool because I think field dressing has incredible utility in Guardians of the Galaxy. It synergizes with almost every single one of their characters more than the average character. So I think that you could take the power gem for that reason. But honestly, he's good enough at generating power with his normal 5-dice attacks that I just don't think you need it. It's more of a filler choice.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I don't mind having it in my rosters. Again, mainly to just help me hit different points values, but I don't really have anything else to add about Star-Lord. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, I think just to conclude, He is a perfectly fine character that does his job well, but he's not spectacular, right? We wouldn't say he is a compelling reason to pick Guardians of the Galaxy.
Absolutely. So next up is, I know we covered them the same time we covered Star-Lord, right? We have Rocket and Groot.
Yeah. So Rocket is my favorite Guardian of the Galaxy. I love him. He's still my favorite two-threat character. Reasons why I like Rocket, he's dirt cheap. His damage output is really effective. He acts from long enough range that he is annoying to deal with. And the fact that he can hide quite well and you've got his traps to punish people for coming close and dealing with him adds up to being really strong. I like his synergy with Guardians. I love Deadly Duo. I think it's one of the more compelling reasons to play Guardians with Groot. And I think he works really well with drop-off on Star-Lord. I can't say enough good things about Rocket. I think he's great.
Yeah, and I Groot's grown on me the more I've played Guardians. And mainly exactly what you said, mainly because I love Rocket so much. Rocket's not my favorite Guardian anymore. We'll get to my favorite Guardian in a little bit. But Rocket's very, very good. Easily in my top three favorite two-costing characters. And just there's a ton of value for the threat he brings. And I have really, really enjoyed playing Deadly Duo more.
Yeah, I think Deadly Duo is awesome. I propose that we talk about it separately when we cover tactics cards, because even though it's not technically Guardians affiliated, it requires two Guardians. And I think it's fair to think of it as being a Guardians card. So we can talk about it in its own. But honestly, I don't think I've seen a Guardians roster that doesn't include Rocket.
Yeah, I haven't seen one either, actually. And he's just very good. And all I want to say about Groot, I don't want to belabor the point too much. We understand Groot's struggles. Just try Groot a little bit more. I think you'll be surprised with him, especially if you want someone who's a little stickier in your Guardians roster.
Yeah, what I'll say about Groot is I think We Are Groot is a very strong card that works really well in specific situations. It's especially good on Gamma Shelter and on Deadly Meteors, where people tend to be more tightly packed and more damage is happening faster. And I like the option with Groot where you can take this card and you can take Drax and Ronan and you can have suddenly quite a tanky team that has good ways to punish people for damaging your characters, but also forces them to deal with some of them, right? You can't just ignore all those characters. And We Are Groot on top of that can really change the team's playstyle inside of their affiliation, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, so I don't think there's anything else to add there. We all know Rocket's great. I think Pat and I would both encourage you to play Groot a little bit more, but by no means is he an auto-include, right?
Yeah, by no means. So where do you want to go next? After these three, the first three that we got a bunch of new releases.
Let's do the sisters.
Okay, so let's start off with Gamora, the more expensive and classic Guardians character. Gamora for me is really interesting because she's fast, she hits ridiculously hard, but she's short range and she's fragile. So she's a very extreme character in her capabilities. What do you think of her?
She's fine. She doesn't make a lot of my rosters. Her coming in high kind of fights with kind of the identity that I normally see the Guardians kind of coming into. She's been hard for me to use for kind of the reasons you outlined. She doesn't have a natural charge, right? She has Assassin's Leap, which is fine. It's a good throw. It's very similar to Black Panther's. But she's been hard for me to utilize very well. I think mainly because Godslayer just is at range two. I like her. I want to like her more. She's always just been okay in the tabletop. I know that's not much of a review.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think Gamora is like her damage output with Deadliest Woman in the Galaxy. Is nuts, right? She does probably, mathematically speaking, she does more damage with her attacks than any other four-cost character. And obviously there's situations where that's not true, but I think it's good to keep in mind that her damage is so, so high. But the challenge is how do you apply it? How do you get her into a situation where she's actually hitting people with two actions in a turn? So hard. And she often has to long move and then attack once, or she gets caught on the back foot and she gets dazed very easily before she gets to activate. So I think when you take Gamora, you have to have a plan to mitigate that. And I think that comes back down to tactics cards. She works really well with drop-off with Star-Lord. She is a good target to have in mind for field dressing just because she's such a high priority for the opponent that she'll often get days before she activates. And that's when field dressing is at its best. She is really good with aim lackeys if you're squeezing MODOK in your list, because that gives her an extra long move. So it basically gives her a free charge. But I think you need to have these plans to make the most of her, to take advantage of her extreme damage and mitigate the big weaknesses that she has.
Field dressing has definitely been the best utilization for her I've found, where she ends up like in a good position, but she's dazed out. We bring her back and she has enough to Cosmic Assassin and hopefully get a rapid strike onto someone else. But yeah, she's just been... She's been a fine character. I don't mean to besmirch or anything. I just feel like she needs something else. I like her with Thanos, if we're jamming Thanos into Guardians, just because it does help deliver her. But I mean, that's more of an after the credits talk here. So for me, Gamora has just been okay. She hasn't been amazing. Her damage output is stellar, but it's just, it's hard damage to deliver, if that makes sense. Crossbones has great damage output, right? But it's hard to deliver Crossbones all the time.
Yes. So I think that's a good review of Gamora. Let's move on then to her other sister, Nebula. A character who in a lot of ways is similar to Gamora, right? But with the big change that she can't score objectives.
Yeah, and for me, the bigger change is actually the fact that she costs half of what Gamora costs, right? So all the struggles with Gamora are very similar to Nebula. Nebula has a much lower expected damage and probable damage when you calc it out in the math. She's still going to struggle with terrain. She doesn't have the ragdoll throw. She's actually just limited to double moving if you want to get her up the board. But I'm okay if a two-point character has to dirtle around a little bit longer than a four-point.
Yeah, you don't feel like it's a waste of your character so much if she's moving around and threatening things, because you don't need her to necessarily make the big plays every turn. I found Nebula to be really strong. Her damage output when she can get her rerolls is very, very respectable. And she's a character who you can't really afford to ignore for that reason, because realistically, she's always going to have targets that she can use Assassin against. Right? The only way she doesn't is if the Guardians are winning by so much that their opponent is just not contesting anything or holding anything, at which point you've got bigger problems. Right? So... she's very good at threatening characters who are much more valuable than her and demanding that your opponent do something about her, which I really, really like.
Yeah, I have nothing but love for Nebula. I've really enjoyed her on the tabletop. She's been a ton of fun.
Yeah, one of the things that I think works really well with Guardians as the wide affiliation, as you called it, is they have a lot of these characters who dish out lots of damage. And sure, none of them are that hard to deal with, but what works really nicely for them is whichever one you don't deal with then is able to punish you, right? And I think Nebula and Gamora are a great example of this, where yes, Gamora is better than Nebula, but if I send both of them at you and you just take out Gamora, well, then Nebula can still deal with that character. And it's the same with Star-Lord, it's the same with Rocket, right? These characters, they're not hard to deal with, but they just do so much damage and you can't deal with them all.
That's basically the high-level summary I've come up with them. But yeah, I really like Nebula. So next up, I think we have Ronan.
Yeah, so Ronan's very different, right? He is one of the few expensive characters coming in at 4 or 5 with the Power Gem. And he is less focused on damage and much more focused on control. He controls in different ways, right? He has ways to control the opponent through effects and through pushes and throws. And he has his judgment and accuser abilities that control the opponent by dissuading them from making attacks. And I think this whole aspect of his character is really fascinating. And it's probably really the first time that we've seen it, at least to this extent, on a character in the game. What do you make of him?
I love him. He's my favorite Guardian. And he's honestly the reason that I've marked Gamora down, is because they both kind of come in at that 4 threat. And normally I only want to take one of them. I agree that he's not the beats character that you want, and I've enjoyed him in other rosters as well, but we're just focusing on Guardians today. He brings throws, albeit a wild throw, but just, again, something we talked about not having a great deal of access to. He brings a push, albeit a wild push, again, but not something Guardians have a ton of access to. And Judgment is just so powerful. I love Judgment so much. If we're already going wider than our opponent and we're able to force judgment out just to mitigate how much activation they're going to get from their powerful characters, I just like it more and more.
Yes, it plays perfectly into the plan that I just mentioned with Nebula, right? You line up all your guardians against your opponent. They have priority, so they activate first and they daze one of them. Well, then you apply judgment, and then one of your guardians hits them back, dazes them, but they don't have any power. And you repeat this kind of cycle, character after character, and hope to come out ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And then while we've kind of talked about it, Ronan in and of himself isn't that tanky, right? He's not easy to kill, but he's not hard to kill, right? I don't remember the exact words we used. But judgment and the accuser dissuading people from attacking him is big, and he can fulfill a role of someone who's an anchor, who's someone who doesn't get displaced because people don't want to attack him, as opposed to some characters that can just simply take the attacks. Does that make sense?
Yes, and it works really well with Drax and Groot for that reason, because you get this lots of characters that don't want to be attacked, and your opponent has to attack some of them. I think he's really, really cool. My criticism of him is his best attacks are range 2, and he is not very fast. I mean, he's not slow, but he doesn't have a charge or a similar effect. So he doesn't have a lot of really explosive turns. But on the other hand, I love the Accuser ability so much. I like Judgment a lot. He's a really fun character to play, and he would always make my Guardians roster.
Yeah, I mean, the Accuser is basically how you get the explosive turn, right? As you accuser him into a position, and later on you activate him, or you field dressing him and he swings twice. But yeah, your opponent almost has to give it to you, right? You're never going to be able to dictate when he gets it.
Yeah, but I mean, just the threat of accuser with Kree Justice is so high, and you often end up in a situation where you've got Ronan on top of your team, and you really have no option but to just power through his accuser attacks, and that feels horrible.
Yeah, does not feel good. No one is excited about that. so I think we both really like Ronan. What do we think about Drax? We talked about Drax a little bit in the Tabletop Simulator Week 6 data review, but do we want to hit that again real quickly at a high level?
Yeah, so what I said is I thought Drax was really overrated. And I think he's fine. He's a perfectly serviceable 3-point character who's very tough, but is not very mobile and has very short range attacks. And he's got some control ability, but those abilities cost power, and he's not particularly good at generating power, mainly because he only does it through these attacks, and it's hard for him to make those attacks in the first place. So to me, he ends up playing a lot like Groot. They both have similar strengths and weaknesses. I do like him, but my point of view with him is he's kind of like filler for the team.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. I'm never super excited about taking Drax, and honestly, I've been going so wide, I've been leaving Drax at home and taking Valkyrie more and more, because I don't have a hard time hitting the affiliation, and it's not like I lose out in a big affiliation team tactics card or something by not having an affiliated character in that slot. So I like Drax. He's a fine character. He does have a throw. It's just, I don't know. He's fine, I think is a good way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, he is fine. Agreed. So I feel like we should say a little bit more about him because we haven't done enough. But I mean, one thing I will say is he plays a little bit into letting the Guardians have a control game, because for his cost, he has a push and a throw, which is pretty unusual. The challenge is the Guardians in general don't do this very well. So it depends. Do you consider that to be, and this is a rhetorical question, right? But how useful is it if in your team you have a character that has unique abilities? It's really helpful to have unique abilities in your characters because then you have more options, right? But it's hard to apply these options with Drax. And if you don't have redundancy in those abilities, you might just find he's got stuff on his card that you don't get to take advantage of. So I think this is the things you have to consider when you're choosing him over other options.
Yeah, sorry, I'm here. I like Drax, and Drax is one of those characters that, I mean, A, the internet just loves. We talked about that in the TTS League. And then Drax always looks better on paper than he has been on the tabletop for me. If he can hit the wilds, all of his attacks have a relevant wild on them, right? It's just a matter of if he can hit the wild. And then I've just had positioning issues with him. I like him. I want to like him more. I just need some way to get him where I want him to be, right? Which is the quintessential issue with him and Groot.
Yeah, he hates being pushed so much.
Yeah, speed medium, range 2.
So those are all of the characters, right? Every single Guardian of the Galaxy?
Yep, outside of the unreleased ones. Yeah, absolutely.
So when you say unreleased ones, you mean Angela, I guess?
Yeah, we know she's coming down the pipe, right? She's an Asgardian and a Guardian, correct?
Yeah, which is interesting. I don't really know anything about Angela. I read up a little bit about how she used to be a Spawn character, but I've never seen her in a Marvel thing, so I don't know what to expect with her, and it'd be interesting to see how she fits in.
Yeah, for a little bit of a fluff dive, if you ever want to hear an interesting story, you should Google about how Angela became part of the Marvel Crisis universe. It's a very interesting story, and I'll leave that there. That sounds like more of a recalibration Matrix episode.
Sure does. Cool. So those are the Guardians of the Galaxy. We've gone through the characters. Now we need to look at the leadership ability. So the leadership ability is obviously on Star-Lord. It's called Winging It. It's a big block of text, but basically what it does is it lets you trade in your team tactics cards for Winging It tokens. Each token gives you 2 rerolls on an attack or defense, and you get 3 of them with your character to use over the course of the turn. So, TT, you've been pretty down on this leadership, right?
I have, and some of that is just like internet thing. Like, it's not all horrible. There are some important quantifiers on it. Pat mentioned it, right? You only have a round to use these Winging It cards, and the Winging It cards all go on the same character. So it's interesting, and it comes at a big price, right? I'm sacrificing a tactics card for these.
Yeah, it's a very big price. Now, 2 rerolls is a lot, and 6 rerolls potentially is huge. And it doesn't cost you any power, unlike, for example, Wakanda, where you get rerolls, but it's at a cost. But you're right, paying a tactics card is a huge alternative cost that you have to pay. And especially because we've got so many good tactics cards now, right? It's not like there's a lot of duds that you're happy to get rid of.
Yeah, I've used them at a few... I've used them at a few different times. I've also stubbornly not used it, just again, to kind of help test out how unaffiliated works. I like it. It's fine to have. It's very situational. I don't ever plan on taking it. I also personally don't like the plan of taking really corner case tactics cards. I'd rather just take good tactics cards. And if for some crazy reason I haven't had a chance to use Brace by round 3 or 4, I might turn Brace into Wing It tokens or something like that. The other thing to mention, I think Pat said this, it's only once per round. So unless you're willing to start burning tokens early, you're only going to use it once or twice.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me, is I find I use this leadership so little. It's not uncommon to play a whole game with Guardians and to just not have it come up, because you have other plans for your cards, or because you're waiting for some other key moment to use that leadership that then doesn't come during the round for whatever reason. So my experience is that it's cool in theory, but in practice, I just have not gotten great use out of it.
Yeah, I mean, none of us are ever upset if we get rerolls, right? It's just, it kind of comes at a weird cost. There are characters that obviously love the rerolls. We talked about any of the characters that are wild fishing. Really, really absolutely love them. But again, it just, I've used it before if I need Nebula or if I need Ronin to like really KO this person to kind of go down. I've used it in the past, but it's definitely not my favorite leadership ability. And as far as leadership abilities go, I think it's pretty low on the chart.
Yeah, I think it's probably the worst leadership ability in the game.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So speaking about practical applications for it for a second, I think there's 2 ways that you can try and get the most out of it. One is to plan to have a character who particularly benefits from rerolls. And this is classically like a high threat value character, probably not themselves affiliated to Guardians, and a character that can reliably make multiple attacks beyond the normal 2 in an activation, so that they can use all of the dice for a big turn. Or who is likely to get attacks, they can use some of the dice on defense. I think that's a fine way to build Guardians. You have lots of cheap characters, then you have some big hero that they're backing up who takes advantage of the leadership. The other way that I think it works well is it plays well into the plan of having lots of disposable characters that all hit hard. You line up, like I said before, you line up all your cheap characters, they take them out one by one, and whichever ones they don't take out can use Ringing It to make sure that they retaliate really hard and punish the opponent for ignoring them.
Yeah, I've actually really liked it with Rocket and Deadly Duo. It's just one of those ways where Rocket's going to generate a lot of attacks, and I just have a lot of opportunities to use the Winging It tokens. But yeah, I definitely like, I put it on someone who's thick, like Ronin normally. Right? I've enjoyed it on Rocket just because Rocket's making so many attacks.
Yeah, I think it's great with Deadly Duo. It's also great for other similar like big plays. I've seen it used really effectively with, for example, Corvus and Proxima, using it on Corvus, dropping him off, rerolling that attack, and then carrying it on into his activation. It's pretty cool. I now immediately doubt if that works, but I'm just going to roll with it. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm sure our listeners will look it up. But yeah, I think the leadership overall is really cool. I think thematically, it's awesome. It fits so well with the idea of Guardians that they throw out their pre-constructed plan and just do their best on the spot. But yeah, I'm not picking this leadership highly.
So next up, we're looking at the tactics cards the Guardians brings to the table. Pat mentioned Deadly Duo before, but I think first we need to talk about the actual affiliated card, Crew of the Milano.
Yeah, so Crew of the Milano is an interesting card. It's one of those cards we've seen similar before, which applies to everyone on the team. And usually these cards are pretty strong because they're cheap, they cost one power to use, and they affect multiple characters. And this one ticks those two boxes. The thing about it is, though, is the effect is quite corner case because it removes status effects and makes the character immune to status effects for the round. This is something that is good, but you rarely want to be applying to everyone in your team. And on one or two characters, I mean, it's nice to have, but often it doesn't have that much utility. I've had some games where it's removed like two status effects from two different characters, and I've been happy with that. But those games don't come up all that often. So I'm not sure where I stand on this card. Where do you stand, TT?
So my initial reading, I was pretty harsh on it, and I still don't love it. I will say that I've forced myself to take it just to try to get a better feel of it. And I agree with you. If I can remove two status effects with it, I normally feel pretty good about this card. The flip side is the times I have used Winging It have almost always been as a result of me pitching Crew of the Milano. Judgment, and as additional status effects come into the game, I could see this card gaining more value. I could also see this card gaining more value if Crises created more and more status effects. Let's say Gamma Shelters did a status if you weren't close to it instead of just damage or something like that. So I think there's potential for this card. I don't think this card is horrible, but this card doesn't look great when you stack it up next to the other unique affiliated cards, is what I'll say.
Yeah, I don't think this card is a strong incentive to play Guardians of the Galaxy, and actually I usually don't include it in my five. Even if I put it in my roster of eight, I think this is a card that you sometimes take, not a card that you regularly play. And because it's the only card that requires affiliated characters, I think this in some ways defines Guardians a bit, but there's not a strong reason to take affiliated characters in your Guardians of the Galaxy list.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that. Like I said, every time I've taken Crew, it's been me forcing myself. Not every time. Most of the times when I take Crew, it's me forcing myself to take it. Again, just to test it, stretch it out, really. So it's a fine card, but it kind of goes back to what we were doing before. Like, once you have the Guardians affiliation, like, you don't need to take the fourth or the fifth Guardian. You can branch out into the other affiliations and take characters.
Yep. Okay. So speaking then about Deadly Duo, because I think we're going to be a bit more positive about this card. Deadly Duo, as we mentioned several times already, is the Rocket Group combo card. And I think this card is awesome. You can set up such sweet plays where Rocket gets to make five attacks in a round, backed up by Winging It. He can generate huge amounts of power and do some really spectacular stuff. Have you found the same?
Yeah, I really like Deadly Duo, and I think you're the one that pointed it out, right? Deadly Duo drop-off is just really, really, really powerful. I've enjoyed it, and it's just another benefit to take Groot, and I really want the big giant tree to work.
Yeah, it definitely like, I like that Groot protects Rocket when you're using Deadly Duo. You don't necessarily want him next to Rocket all the time because he can be a liability. But I think the Deadly Duo card is pretty strong. I personally take it whenever I'm playing the two of them together. And I do include Groot in most of my Guardians rosters so that I have the option to play it. Just, you can have such incredible swings when Rocket gets to make those three attacks, generate a ton of power, and still have his whole activation left. You could throw out a couple of Hadron Enforcers. You can use other tactics cards. You can have lots of power left over to use booby traps. I think it's really, really cool. And like, a good Deadly Duo can be that play that swings the game in your favor.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people don't realize how far range 5 is a lot of times. But he's going to make a ton of attacks. And like you said, the fact that it powers him up because of the plasma rifle wording, like, I really like this card. I underrated it when I first read it because I think I was being too critical of Groot. But the more I've played this card, I've liked it.
Yeah, and my experience is generally you play this card on turn 2, where Groot has 2 power from having powered up twice. And you just move Groot to the position you need and do everything you can to get Rocket there. If you can get him there with drop-off, even better. And you just have an explosive turn that hopefully starts to swing things in your favor early.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, it's real cool. Okay, so that's the tactics cards. Is there anything else to cover?
I think we just have our recap. So what do we think of Guardians, Pat?
So if I were to recap those 4 categories, we said that we think Star-Lord is fine, but nothing special. Right? He's maybe got like an average grade, maybe like a C or something.
Yeah, maybe a C+.
Yeah. The characters, there's a lot of them. Their cheap cost is a big strength that other affiliations don't have. And they fulfill a lot of different roles. So I'd say their affiliated characters are overall pretty strong and pretty compelling. I'd say they're better than average. They're more numerous and they do unique things. And then we've got the leadership, which we rated as the worst leadership, and Crew of the Milano, which we think is not very good. If you charitably include Deadly Duo, then I'd say their tactics cards are passable, but not great. And with just Crew of the Milano, I'd say they have the worst tactics cards in the game. No contest.
With Deadly Duo, don't they still have the worst tactics cards in the game?
Yeah, they probably do. Who are they competing with? Maybe you
Avengers?
Think Asgard. Maybe you think both combined are better than Odin's Blessing. I don't.
Okay,
maybe
if we're counting Deadly Duo, we have to count Sibling Rivalry, right?
You're right. They're definitely no better. Okay, so basically what we're saying is they got an unexciting leader, a bad leadership, bad cards, but their characters are fine.
Their characters might be better than fine, and they've been, I can't stress this enough, I know this is like a weird endorsement considering we're like a quote-unquote try-hard podcast, I've really, really, really enjoyed playing them. It's an interesting way to approach the game, and it's an interesting thought dive into the question that we're asked a lot, is like, do I need to be playing an affiliation, or can I just take the best characters out of the thing? And Guardians comes pretty close to just being like, I mean, do you really need an affiliation? So,
yeah, I think it's interesting as well. I think one thing that we've mentioned a couple of times, but can't be overstated, is how impactful it is to just have so many cheap options. And this is something that only they can do, and that enables them to do team compositions that no one else can consider. Right, they can take expensive options from other teams and make them work while still being affiliated. And sure, their benefits from being affiliated aren't huge, but just the fact they have these options and no one else does means there's a compelling reason to play Guardians, even if each individual benefit doesn't seem that great.
And we're going to talk about the way that they can kind of steal characters from other affiliations in the after the credit scene. So if you're a Patreon, you can stay tuned and listen to that. We thank you all so much for listening. And yeah, I really hope you get out there and play some Guardians of the Galaxy games.
Me too. They're really fun. They're really cool. And you know what? Just because we've given them a lackluster review, that doesn't mean we're right. So please give them a go and prove us wrong.
I'm going to be playing them in the next Tabletop Simulator League. So I'll actually be playing in the league and I'm going to play Guardians. Spoilers.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere across the Bifrost, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.